If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air, everyone. How has your week been so far? How has yours been, Alex?
I think mine has been hectic, but I don't think it's been as hectic as what yours probably has been, because I couldn't even keep up with where you were, if I'm honest, over the last week. And I feel like it's been a while since we spoke. I don't know why. I think because, you know, so much happens in between.
Yeah.
It feels longer. But you are now back and settled. I mean, take me through the whirlwind that was your last 7 days. And I want the details, and so do the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I was texting Alex, guys, like, you have 1 hour to send this stuff during my layover in Rome. I have 1 hour here, so I need this, that. Like, I was trying to coordinate everything so specifically because I was just flying back to back to back. And everything started with, I spent about 2 weeks in Dubai, and then I decided, okay, I'm leaving on Virgin Atlantic. And I haven't flown with Virgin Atlantic for years, since like 20, I don't know, it's probably been 7 years since I flew them. I flew them in upper class then for the first time. Obviously, things have changed. And, you know, I hear people say great things about Virgin Atlantic, but neither of us really fly them that much compared to, you know, other airlines we fly. So I was very excited, even though it was a 787. And immediately when I boarded, I thought of the conversation we had in Doha about how some Brits, a specific type of Brit, can really be some of the nicest, sweetest people in the world. And I think you know which type of Brit I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's the... Okay, so we spoke about it in the context of how, you know, how people say that British Airways' greatest strength is their staff, and you really get like an individual staff member. Let's be honest, it's usually an older lady who, it just, you know, the whole service concept comes absolutely natural to her, and she's naturally charming each and every passenger in an effortless way. That's kind of like, isn't it, the context that we were discussing. But before you go into that, isn't it funny that, wasn't it the episode before last that we were asked by Stephen, a listener, about Virgin Atlantic? And we were also discussing how, you know, we don't know, they seem a little lost in the area of their non-transatlantic network. So basically when Virgin Atlantic fly east rather than what they're specializing of, which is transatlantic travel. And here you are rocking up to Dubai airport being like, I'll try a little bit of that.
I'm like, hello. But you know, I mean, Brits flock to Dubai like nowhere else. So of course, every like Virgin Atlantic flight to Dubai is full. The crew told me every single flight is sold out. My flight didn't have one empty seat in any cabin. And so the thing I wanted to say just about the crew, obviously Virgin Atlantic is fun in many ways. The seat, isn't the most fun, but like you board and you just feel embraced by the crew. Everyone, young, old, are so nice. And they're the type who's like, hi, love, welcome, and guide you to your seat. And, you know, I just hear them talking to all the other passengers like, how was your meal, sir? Would you like some dessert? Maybe some tiramisu, cheesecake? Like, just, they're so enthusiastic and do the most.
Tiramisu.
Sorry.
What did you say? Tiramisu?
I don't know how Brits pronounce tiramisu.
Well, I don't know. How does a half Swede, half New Yorker pronounce it?
I don't know either. I just say whatever comes up. But genuinely, like, this, the staff of all ages, and I have to give a shout out to Sam, Lauren, Haley, Emily. I'm forgetting someone, but they were like, literally, I was talking to the crew the whole flight because they were so amazing. And I learned some fascinating things because Virgin Atlantic just had like a huge round of hiring. And one of the pursers, because they had two for some reason, is a crew trainer for Virgin. And she was saying, in this round of hiring, they had over 8,000 applicants for 150 spots. So that is competitive and explains why Virgin Atlantic is so famous for really having like way above staff, even on a global scale.
That's fascinating. So you were on a 787-9, right? And the crew in Dubai will have had a layover for, I mean, is it just that day? So basically, would they arrive the day before?
And I then guess like 30 hours or night? So.
30 hours. Okay, not too bad. Not too bad. And Dubai is not very far away at all, is it, from the UK? Just a six-hour flight. Did the crew, how were they? I mean, you were filming this flight. So when, I guess a lot of people wonder this, including me, do you have to take permission from the airline? Do you give them a heads up? Hey guys, I'll be filming. I think I know the answer is no, but I'll give you a chance to you know, just correct that rhetoric just in case it's out there.
Yeah, the answer is definitely no. I never inform them beforehand. If they ask, like, so I only record on my iPhone, which is, it doesn't really draw attention. Most of the time people don't react to it. I also do a very subtly, I look, is there any crew nearby? Okay, then I'll hide that I'm doing it. So I try to be really sneaky, which I think makes me look a little sus because I'm like really sort of, if I see a crew coming, I'll like very quickly move or stop recording. So they'll be like, what's going on? But oh, I prefer...
I'd be reporting you to the CSD within the first 20 minutes of being able.
Yeah, that's me. I'm surprised I haven't been reported yet. But if they ask...
We don't fly enough together.
Yes, I know. If they ask... Since I'm only using an iPhone, I'll go, you know, oh, so I'm actually making like a YouTube video about this flight. And then since that's all I'm filming with, the crew is every time they're always like, oh, that's sweet. Because they think I'm recording for like my 10 subscribers with my little phone. And they have no idea that hundreds and thousands of people are going to see it. So that works out quite well for me. And this
what
crew.
What a flex.
Is, I mean, okay, with this crew... I did tell them because like we ended up sitting at the bar and like talking for a really long time. And then I flew BA the next day. And I think it's really clear that Virgin Atlantic is so strong in their brand. And like I understand why people really love it. Mm-hmm. And this British Airways flight out of Heathrow had a bus gate. And I thought of you because, I mean, all the time now I'm thinking this is a great story for the podcast. So... Bus gates, luckily at Heathrow, especially Terminal 5, are rare, which we know. I mean, Gothenburg is now Terminal 3, never had a bus gate there. but this was Rome, and I was kind of surprised.
Never had a bus gate there because I don't know if that flight exists, Dan. I think it's just in your head. It's like, oh, we never have bus gates. We only have, you know, whatever, private jet transfers. I'm like, okay, yeah, that sounds believable.
Okay, anyway, I'll also give credit to Heathrow. It was a very smooth morning, but we got on the bus. And you know how I always...
Is this the like dreaded A10 gates?
It was the gates that are basically by Terminal 3. It feels like you're flying Virgin Atlantic because they're...
No, but right, when you're boarding...
Yes, it is A10. That's right.
So it is A10. Okay, yeah. Right. So basically, so you go to the middle of the departure floor down to the basement level, and then you've got like A10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever is it, exactly. A, B, C, D, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was A10E. And then they drove us all the way basically to Terminal 3. Those stands basically right across the taxiway from Terminal 3. And there was an American woman on the bus that was cracking me up. At 6 a.m. in the morning, she was so loud. We boarded the bus and she was dying from laughter. I was like, what is going on? She goes, what is going on? We're taking a bus to the plane? And she was laughing so hard with her friend about the fact we were taking the bus. And then she's like, you know, next thing we're going to pull up at a giant yellow plane. I'm sure that's what's going to happen because she means there's going to be a Spirit Airlines plane waiting. So it's funny to think how Americans are so not used to bus gates that the concept of boarding a bus once is like mind blowing. And then as we're driving, it's far to get to those gates. She's like, I guess she was, I don't know if she was with her boyfriend or whatever, but she's like, do you think they're taking us back to the car rental? This bus ride is further than the ride back to the car rental. So yeah, it was just a very
entertaining. You know, it can feel ridiculously long when it's anything over like 10 minutes. It just feels, you know how fast some of the remote stands are in Doha. And sometimes if I'm in the car going from the terminal to the aircraft and like 18 minutes and we're still, it's like the same joke is made every time. I'm like, are we going to Bahrain? Because there's no way that we are not almost there. We've been in the car for so long. And also it's extra ironic because Doha is so small, as in the city itself. So it's just funny that, you know, it's very rare that in Doha you'll do a journey that is over 18 to 20 minutes. So it's funny that that is something that you end up doing airside at the airport. You know?
Yeah, it takes you longer to get to your aircraft from the terminal than it takes to get from your hotel or apartment to the airport in Doha.
Yeah, exactly. But it's funny.
Really makes me wonder, like, you think about all these people from countries that don't really have bus gates and they go to a place like Doha, which is so bus gate heavy. And there it's just like normal. Everyone knows, okay, bus gates, I'll have a bus gate like 50% of the time. That's just part of the experience. But to many people,
like
they hear
you attract them though. I feel like even on that morning flight to Rome, I was laughing because you were messaging me like, we have a bus gate. No, you didn't say hi. You said, yeah, we have a bus gate. And I replied, I just feel that you're like a magnet to them. I mean, I haven't had a bus gate at Terminal 5 in forever. As you know, I've had freaking C57, which is the equivalent of going from London to, you know, outside of London. It feels so far, but it still doesn't involve a bus. It involves either the, you know, the monorail train shuttle connection or the... I don't do that. I do the underground walkway, get the steps in, a nice brisk walk in the cool underground area, and then come up for air at Terminal T5C. But that still is better than having to go on the bus. Also, for example, on this flight, do you know how many they used to transport passengers from A10 to your aircraft?
Like, I think they only had two buses. Two. So it's, it wasn't a super full flight. But I mean, personally, I would rather have a bus gate at A10 because the odds are quite high of having, you know, there's those stands just to the side of Terminal 5. It's like a 2-minute bus ride.
Oh,
I would rather have that than the C gates on an inter-European flight.
But it's like, it's so, when you're pulling up at those, I'm thinking, okay, there's a gate next to me. It means I'm a gate. There's a jet bridge. Yeah. And they're like, no, you're the first one. That is,
yeah.
It's just worse when you're arriving, I feel.
Yeah, it is. And I'm sure we both know that feeling so much in Doha and elsewhere when you're like taxiing past jetways.
Mm.
And then you're like just, you're tensing up like, please don't turn in the direction of the bus gates.
Turn
please,
right.
Please yes. turn toward the gates. Like, and I it know. Could be 50-50. And then you start feeling like you're turning the other way and you're just like, no, this isn't happening.
I like how forthcoming and willing BA are, because of course, when I reached out to British Airways to request that you only have a remote standard that's really far, they were absolutely, you know, willing. They saw the bigger picture. And so thank you, British Airways, for delivering on that, because it's great to, you know, keep the guy humble. Otherwise, he's just running around the bar of the upper class Virgin 78-9, chilling with the crew and roasting God knows which other British carrier during his 6-hour venture from the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, you're outsourcing your humility to me, because not all of us can have Heathrow VIP when we fly from Terminal 5.
Okay, well, that's low, okay? And there's no need. I mean, you know, we're supposed to be friendly co-hosts. We're not supposed to take swipes at each other.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that you think of like the glamorous... just famous Middle Eastern hubs, and then an American lands for the first time. So I imagine many people are like, what, a bus? And have a similar reaction to this girl. After that, I flew I flew London, Rome to Delhi. And every single flight I took after Virgin Atlantic, the service was just so disappointing. Like, I can't wait. I have so many examples in my video. It will be up in several months, so it's not something coming very soon, but I have so many examples just of how amazing the service was. And it was like really heartwarming for me to feel that, you know, we moan a lot about service on European airlines being hit or miss. It can be great, but it isn't always great. And this was just one of those things where I was like, the service being this good renews my faith that it's very much possible to have out of this world service on an airline that isn't Singapore Airlines or ANA or something like that.
Mm. How long was your layover in Rome?
Well, like 1.5 hours. That's why I texted you.
ASAP. You did text me, because of course Dan is the one who's going to be, you know, taking the audio file of the podcast and distributing it to all the platforms and so on. And he sent me this stressed message saying the Wi-Fi is terrible and and I only have an hour, and I was like, well, have fun.
That's your problem. You
know? Yeah. But did you have to go through security again in Rome or no?
No. I was shocked, because I also haven't been in Rome in many years, and the smoothest transfer ever. Obviously, I was arriving from non-Schengen London, and I was connecting to non-Schengen. So I literally just was dropped out right into the terminal next to a store selling the nicest olive oils, vinegar, olives, all these amazing Italian products. I was like, ooh, this is quite a nice benefit of connecting in Italy that I haven't thought about in a long time, that you can stock up on this stuff. And yeah, just such a smooth experience, which, I'm thankful for that, because otherwise it might have been quite tight.
The last time I flew from Rome 6 months ago was coming back, and it was a Sunday evening, which is, you know, the end of like a weekend trip for a lot of people. And the airport was absolutely packed. And yet security, and I'm not talking about fast track and blah, blah, blah. It was, you know, just the normal general security that I was passing through. Completely smooth, effortless. Why? Because the signs are absolutely clear, and clearly the message had been communicated to the flying public: leave everything in your bags. Nothing has to be taken out. Nothing. Mm. So they have the new CT scanners, of course. It means that you don't have to remove anything from your, you know, no liquids, no electronic devices, and so on and so on. Wow, does that make a difference? You know, then you compare that to, okay, I haven't been in about 5 years, but you compare that to somewhere like Stansted Airport, which I'm not sure how that is today, but the last time I was there, which was a little bit pre-pandemic, there were more backed up rejected security trays than there were passengers, you know.
Yeah.
In that. So
So one question I thought of when you said this, I remember we got this for a Q&A. Someone submitted it. I can't find the question this quickly, but off the top of my head, I remember the question was, what's the status update, if you know, of Heathrow's new security system that will allow people to bring liquids greater than 100 ml? Because that was such an exciting development, but I feel like it's delayed.
Guess what the status update of it is?
Nothing.
It is that they are unable to meet the outlined start commencement date, and they'll update us when they know that they're going to be able to. So basically, all they've done is postpone it. It's still going to happen, but they're not. They have made it quite clear to the government that they are not going to be adhering or sticking to the date that was first published by the government themselves, which was supposed to be commencing this year. So supposedly this year, this summer especially, you were supposed to be able to have that experience, and they have just quite literally have said no, it's not happening. It will happen, but not on the government's timeline. And it's just like, come on. I mean, there's so much innovation that happens in every other sector and in every other part of society. And you just, these machines exist, right? It's just a case of rollout. Why is everything in the UK so difficult when it comes to, oh, you know, we can't do that, that would be too easy, or the rollout for that would... And I do think a lot of it is a tone set by the fact that, you know, without going too much into politics, ask anyone in the UK and they will agree with you that the country just has not worked over recent years. It's like everything started in about 2017 and, you know, coincided with Brexit and then the pandemic and so on and so on. And it's just impossible. Nothing works. Public transport doesn't work. And you know, anything to do with government, local government, the council, God forbid you get in a car and drive from the airport and you'll hit about 500 potholes, these craters in the road. You know, they're just, I feel like it's just linked with that. It's just another pylon of that. Oh, and add to the fact that they were, you know, had this nice, shiny, glossy announcement of how it was going to be really easy for travellers with these new scanners. Actually, just like everything else, they can't stick to the day. It's running late. It's, you know, it's just like how there's no high-speed rail project that's now been binned by the Prime Minister. There's going to be an election sometime this year that will wipe out all of the Tories for the first time in 13 years. Anyway, I just, yeah, that's the update. And I think anyone that is, you know, that has to travel through the UK a lot, specifically for transit, those machines make all the difference, especially because Heathrow is, as you know, absolutely militant when it comes to making sure that clear plastic bag is sealed tightly closed and you're not allowed more than... Did you know that they have this thing where you're not allowed more... You're not allowed multiple of the same product?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so for example, let's say you've got a Hawaiian Tropic, right, factor SPF 30, and you have it in a 200 ml bottle, okay? You're not allowed to split it into two lots of 100 ml bottles. But of course, this is extremely difficult for them to check, because you could just fill it into another bottle that wasn't, for example, branded as Hawaiian Tropic and stick a sticker on it that says shampoo. And yeah, it won't be checked. So it just depends how it's such a stupid rule that I wonder if recently they've got rid of it. But I can remember things being taken off passengers because they said, no, you can't just split a big bottle into two small ones because you're still taking the same quantity. But then that's ridiculous because they're not checking what is inside your other bottles and your other, you know, also who's to say that you're not with that passenger? So for example, let's say I'm with my sister, you know, and we've got one each. That doesn't mean it's for... Oh, it's a mess. Yeah. Anyway, this is why they need these scanners. Yeah.
So you know how the US has like the gun lobby, the dairy lobby? Do you think Heathrow has the boots lobby?
Maybe. And of course, explain what you mean by that to anyone that doesn't know what Boots is.
So Boots is a huge chain of pharmacies. It's in many countries outside the UK as well. But it is... like every fifth store in Heathrow, not quite, but there's many in each terminal in Heathrow selling toiletries, and they seem to do good business. I always fall for it because I love the travel minis section at Boots. it's like it just draws you in with all these miniature products of everything you use. And then I go to check out. I wanted to buy like a mini shaving cream. I go to check out and then I'm like, this is £2 or £2.50.
More.
This is like the price of a full-sized shaving cream. So double. Just yeah, just because it's like a mini, I'm like, oh, it must be a great deal, but it's actually a terrible deal, and I've just been scammed.
It's true. Boots, what's the equivalent in the US? CVS?
Well, I mean, there's many pharmacies, yeah, CVS, Rite Aid, but the thing is that in the US, like most airports, that's the irony, there are pharmacies on every block in New York City, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then there's no pharmacies at the airport for some reason. The place where I always love a good airport pharmacy. I don't know about you.
No, I avoid them. But I see people in there, like, you know, with tissues by their nose. I'm like, oh, stay away.
Okay, that's not what I'm thinking about. I'm just thinking about, like, ooh, get something on the go. But yeah, the UK just has good pharmacies. I like them.
I remember landing at Terminal 5 in January, and Demi said to me, I just want to get, like, you know, something for the car journey, crisps or whatever. I was like, okay, three things. I walked away and I was like, Demi, I just spent £28. And I don't know what on, like, what? Yeah. I checked the... I was like, we just went for dinner.
Genuinely, I don't think it's any more noticeable in any other place than the UK, the cost of living crisis. Because I think in both our minds, like me having grown up there a bit, obviously you being from there, we just think of like, okay, a meal deal is such a cheap thing. Or like at Pret, you can get a cheap sandwich. And I just buy it without thinking about what I've spent until I've spent it. And I'm like, this is the same price as like Wagamama's.
Yeah. Same price as a meal restaurants, especially Pret at an airport, which I do always fall for as well. They have a good one at Toulouse Airport. And when I was leaving Toulouse, I thought, okay, I'm hungry. So I buy like the croissant, the one with the ham and cheese, you know, that one. And then also buy the cheese and tomato one. And I took a quiche that was in the box, and then the cranberries and a drink. Okay, blah, blah, blah.
Did you buy the whole place?
No, I mean, it wasn't that much. Like, for example, it would be the equivalent of, let's say, me and someone else, except it was just me, right? Yeah. She was like, 42. Excuse me. I was like, my French is all right, but I just need you to say that in English. She was like, 42. I was like, what? And that's because also, what is the deal? Okay, see if you know the answer to this, because I don't. Why in these establishments at airports are they saying to you, dine in or take away? I'm like,
there is
how
no
long
time.
Do you think I'm dining in for? We are airside. So,
That's so true. I love... Like, the concept of an airside restaurant is also quite interesting. Like, Heathrow has... Actually, Terminal 5 has several real restaurants. Terminal 3 as well. And I always wonder, like, how long does your layover need to be for you to have a full sit-down meal? Wait, like, 30 minutes for your food to come out.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be one of those people who arrives at the airport, like, 4 hours early, which I know a lot of people do, but... It is.
In Sweden, at Stockholm, you know, they have like the airport city area.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sat there and had a pizza and then glanced at this is years ago. Oh my God. This is when I saw you. It was
the SAS
Scandinavian
A320 Neo.
SAS A320 Neo delivery event. Yeah. Oh my God. It was freezing in that hangar. Do you remember?
I know. I mean, it's very Swedish to not turn on the heating. Like, it's really? Always about eco-friendly, using as little resources as possible. So, like, no, you guys put on more clothes. We don't need to make it more than 10 degrees in this hangar.
I remember I was freezing and it was a hangar. I mean, that's not a place that should, for an event. And it's like they, you know, please turn the heating on. Anyway, they didn't. Yeah. We were on the aircraft where it was warmer. But anyway, I had a pizza and then I almost missed the flight because I underestimated how far that airport city thing was from
and it's
the actual
landside.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, the part that I forgot. I mean, I don't know what was going on with me that day. It was years and years ago. Had I flown in that morning? Yes, I think I had. Yes, I had. At like 5 o'clock in the morning, we had a full day. You know what? I blame the hangar. It was absolutely freezing, and look what happened. I was almost missed my flight.
Yeah, so speaking of SAS, we can go into news because we have, I mean, a little bit of interesting news about SAS. They have clarified the timeline for them leaving Star Alliance, and it is soon. You know, airlines will be like, when they're joining a new alliance, they're like, we will join in 3 years' time. And you're just like, okay, thanks for the update. Yeah. Meanwhile, SAS is like, no, we're aiming to join SkyTeam in Q2. That means in a matter of months. Depending on when in Q2, they're hoping to leave Star Alliance and join SkyTeam, which is a huge deal for, well, mainly people living in Scandinavia. But I think it's really exciting. To me, I would much rather have an airline partnered with Air France KLM, some of the best airlines in Europe, instead of, you know, we don't need to mention the existing SAS partners.
Well, that's interesting. And that is really soon. And it's funny because sticking with the alliance theme, I also saw that Fiji will be joining by 2020.
One World, we should say.
Yeah, Fiji will be joining One World by 2026.
Yeah. So that's one of those announcements where it's like, okay, thanks for getting us hyped for nothing.
You're talking about this for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Oman Air was supposed to join or is supposed to join One World this year after we've been waiting for many years. But now Oman Air is a shell of its former self. Yeah. Will they proceed with these plans? We don't know. I don't know if it makes much sense for them.
I do have an answer. So it is the intention that Oman Air will be joining OneWorld. And that's even despite the shrink. Now, Oman Air have actually stopped flying the A330s. And so that they're no longer flying in their aircraft. Did you know that?
Yes, I knew that.
So it is their full intention to join OneWorld, despite the fact that the airline is just going to be so much, you know, smaller version of itself, which is so sad, as we have previously spoken about.
Yeah, and I mean, at that point, we already have Qatar Airways dominating the Middle East in OneWorld. We also have Royal Jordanian. Yep. So the value added by Oman Air is extremely minimal. But hey, if they want to join, fine. I think they would make much more sense joining Star Alliance because Star Alliance has a big hole in the Middle East that could be, I mean, at least partially filled by Oman Air. But yeah, I guess given their partnership with Qatar Airways and them sponsoring them into OneWorld, that's what makes sense. So that's the little update on SAS. Speaking of Star Alliance, Lufthansa is striking again this week.
It's been weekly.
Yeah, and we've spoken about it so much and I've just been like, yeah, that's Lufthansa. But for the first time, I am impacted and my family is impacted.
No.
Yes. So Oscar's mom was supposed to fly Lufthansa on Friday. Okay. Both flights canceled.
Oh.
I had a Lufthansa flight booked. I wasn't sure if I was going to take it, but I had it booked and that was canceled. So I was like, okay, well, don't mind me if I just take some EU compensation now, because this is something we should correct from a previous episode. These strikes are caused by Lufthansa staff striking. That means it is not an extraordinary circumstance, which means you're eligible for EU compensation. So make sure to hold them accountable for that and get the money you deserve.
And if there is one part of the podcast of today's episode that you listen to, I hope, dear listener, that it was that. Because Lufthansa has such a big reach and we always hear from passengers who are booked to fly them, you know, those that are, you know, maybe the passengers are never actually traveling to Germany. They're just traveling through Germany. And so because these strikes are on an almost weekly basis, and that's what we've been seeing, you are entitled, as Dan said, because these are Lufthansa staff members that are striking.
Yeah. So also, it's so different when you're impacted by it, because before, you know, I've read it's happening, but now there's so many things that I'm like, what is going on? So first of all, I'm all for workers being allowed to strike, but how is it allowed that they announce a strike 2 or 3 days before it goes into action? Like, can they at least give a few weeks' notice so that these hundreds of thousands of travelers won't be completely screwed over like they're being now? Like, trying to find a new ticket for Oscar's mom has been a nightmare. I've just canceled the Lufthansa ticket and booked her on KLM instead because I'm like, this, I'm not going to deal with. I tried to join Lufthansa's chat. I was 800th in line. After a few hours, I was 400th. And then the chat just stopped updating. So something happened. Moral of the story, Lufthansa should be doing something about these strikes. And since they're not, at least claim the compensation you are rightfully due. I will be doing that for the ticket I had and, of course, for Oscar's mom.
Yeah. It's, I mean, what you mentioned about kind of the notice that they give, that's more to do with German workers' rights laws and, you know, the laws surrounding strike action. They don't actually need to, do they, give as much notice as in other countries, which is why you get these very last-minute strikes. I always especially feel for the nightmare of the fact that it's not just a, you know, a point to point because somebody's going to miss a meeting in Munich or they're not going to get to a night out in Paris for a concert as early as they had hoped. But it's like, what about those that have a cruise that is leaving on the same day? Or, you know, or they have taken the risk because maybe they're unaware of, you know, to make an accurate risk assessment. For example, an older couple, right? And they're booking two separate airline tickets. Imagine the first flight is by Lufthansa and then the second flight is a once-in-a-lifetime trip to South Africa that they've saved up all their money for and their hotel is booked and the car rental is done and the safaris are booked and everything. And it's like, that is just, that's nightmarish. And then you imagine they wait a whole year and then 48 hours before they're like, oh, well, the first part is not operating. So good luck now dealing with the domino effect.
Yeah, you know? And there's so little help. It's so hard to get. I mean, if you're going to have constant strikes, at least have good enough IT infrastructure to rebook people as much as possible automatically.
Yeah. Well, keeping with Star Alliance, the first Turkish Airlines flight touched down in Australia, which is good because that's been much awaited. They were speaking about that, I think, 10 years ago, back when you and I were on one of these small little Lufthansa Star Alliance flights where people were discussing how Turkish Airlines is going to go to Australia. Turkish Airlines has landed down under now is the headline, which is great. And the development that they had at the same time as these Istanbul to Melbourne flights is that they will be starting Istanbul to Sydney flights this year. And it's going to be either on an A350 or a 787, which has got the nice new business class in the 121 config. And the idea is that it will follow the same structure as what the Melbourne flight does. So there will be a stopover in Singapore, but then the non-stop flights will begin, non-stop down flights will begin when Turkish take delivery of the A350-1000, the longer range, more capable aircraft to have it commence these nice long hauls connecting Central Asia to Australia. So it's always great to see when, especially, I love developments on the Kangaroo route, you know, that route that links Australia with the rest of the world, because it's just such an interesting route where some airlines make money, some don't. There's amazing products, there's less amazing products, and so on and so on. And speaking of product, let's go to what happened in London this week, because I had hinted to you on a previous episode that British Airways were preparing to make some significant announcements in terms of a modernization of the passenger experience or different areas of the company. And finally, this week, they have now gone public and I can share some highlights on the details of this. So the standout thing, first and foremost, well, I guess two standout things. Firstly, we have new short-haul seats on the Airbus A320s and the Airbus A321neo jets that are going to be delivered from Airbus over the coming weeks. Have you seen the photo of the new seats?
I have.
Which airline did it remind you of, first and foremost?
It did remind me of an airline, but I've seen them enough to now just think it's BA. I can't remember what I thought of. What did you think of?
I thought it looked exactly like Delta.
Yeah. It's quite similar, but it's also quite similar to American with the headrest and the red on the side. So, yeah.
It's cool to see BA embracing some of that red, which typically is neglected from everything that is not on the outside. In terms of the interiors in the cabin, red doesn't feature, I think, anywhere in the cabin, in their existing cabins. So these seats look pretty smart. They do look good. And I like the fact that we're going to be having these new seats on short-haul aircraft. But as with everything, important to mention that these new cabin interiors will only be on 320neo and 321neos that are arriving from around May this year. There is absolutely no word on the rest of the fleet being refit with these seats, which suggests that they may only be on a handful, and the 100 plus rest of the short haul fleet will continue to have the mixture of seats that they have now, which is a mixture of the harder kind of false leather seats, also the split seats on the 320neos, where you've got the harder, smarter ones for the first 10 or so rows, only followed by the EasyJet style ones for the rest of the cabin. It's all a bit mixed baggy. So I hope we hear something about the refit, but there's been no word on that, which suggests that it's not currently the priority.
Yeah, I think the nice thing about these seats is that they have USB-C, but if you want to wow us, let's, you know, get competitive with the rest of the world. Can you imagine if an airline in Europe introduced seat back screens in economy? I mean, it's not going to happen, but that would be the truly wow moment, when you're just like, this is something new. Now we're stepping it up, you know. We're creating that separation between low cost and full service, because Ryanair might as well introduce USB-C as well and just charge £5 to use it. That's what Scoot does with their USB ports. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not like having a USB port is as mind-blowing as something like that would be.
What we'll do is we'll have the cover, the album cover for today's episode, the episode cover on YouTube, to be this seat so that you can see it, so you can have a glimpse of it if you haven't seen it already. But it is a smart looking seat, and it's much more padded, and that's based on passenger feedback, because BA seats typically being rather firm on the short haul cabins. And it looks smart, and I'm looking forward to this. I hope it's going to be on more than just 25 or so aircraft, because that's currently the outlined schedule. It's just those 320neo family jets that are yet to have been delivered from Airbus. That's that. As part of the package, BA also will be introducing a new first class suite, which is expects to debut at the end of 2025 on the A380. That's part of the A380 refurbishment that's coming up. That's still quite a way away. We have no details about what that seat is going to look like, so we'll come back to that when we have something about it. There are some new lounge concepts and some updates, including the BA lounge in Dubai. And a nice little touch is that there will be free messaging via the onboard Wi-Fi, specifically via apps such as WhatsApp, but also iMessage and so on, to passengers, which is nice for them to be able to stay in touch. And crucially, for anyone that has struggled with this over the last few years, the airline will be having an entirely new website and a mobile app, where they say that they'll be able to send, for example, hotel vouchers in the event of a cancellation directly to the passenger via the app. I mean, it's 2024. This is absolutely what is required of a mobile application for passengers.
Yeah, US airlines really lead the pack. American, no, but United and Delta have such amazing tech. Like, United's app is mind-blowingly good, and we need to see more airlines stepping it up to that level where everything should be automatic. You know, canceled flight. Okay, I can find exactly the tools I need to rebook on the app. If I want to change my flight or cancel, the fact that many airlines still require you to call to change or cancel a ticket in 2024 is unbelievable.
Also this week, American Airlines have finally announced an order that I was hearing kind of rumors of for the last few weeks and months. And it's far more of a diplomatic order than I expected, and I think many expected, because they've literally taken like an equal slice from Boeing, from Airbus, and from Embraer. I mean, what did you think when you saw this land in your inbox?
Well, my first thought was, what? They're ordering more old generation embryos. That the other orders, I was like, okay, you know, this I understand, but it's very interesting to see, you know, order future deliveries of an aircraft that has been around a very long time. Specifically, they ordered a ton of Embraer 175s. And
well, they're ordering 90 of them.
Yeah, which is insane because there's literally an E2 version, so the next generation of that coming up. The problem which Embraer is trying to work out, which I feel so bad because you and I, you know, as the listeners know, are such advocates for environmentalism in aviation as much as possible and having the most efficient fleets possible. And this aircraft represents a huge improvement, the new Embraer 175 E2. The problem is the engines are too big, so the aircraft is too heavy to operate on regional airline contracts, which are the ones American Airlines uses for their American Eagle flights. And American Eagle is the subsidiary that operates these smaller aircraft. So the contracts have all these stipulations to make sure that, you know, these regional pilots are not competing or, you know, under basically being able to undercut the mainline captains and pilots. So, you know, a limited number of passengers, limited weight of the aircraft, all these things are set in place. And that really comes back to punish the airline, passengers, and the environment in situations like this, where they have to opt to order an old aircraft instead of ordering a new, more fuel efficient one, which should be ready to fly in a few years.
Yeah. That's very true. It's very true. It was unusual. And actually, when I was sharing this announcement on Twitter, most of the replies were all about this Embraer order. They were like, what? These are the older aircraft? What? Because it is rare and we don't see that. And it is perfectly understandable that American feel they need more A321neo aircraft, which they deploy quite sensibly, I think, in my opinion. It is a vote for confidence for Boeing. So it's a definite, a true vote of confidence for Boeing, because the order does include 85 Boeing 737 MAX 10s. And of course, Boeing is currently struggling with a whole series of production flaws, you know, the certification of new aircraft that is taking much longer than expected. That's not just about the 737 MAX, but also the 777X and so on and so on. And especially at the time when we have the CEO of American's rival, United, just a couple of months ago saying that he was assessing, you know, their immediate future fleet plans without 737 MAX 10s that they've ordered because they know of the delays and the troubles that Boeing is facing. So I'm sure Boeing, this was a little bit of light relief for them to have been part of this order, and also for the Airbus side of the order to not have dwarfed, if you like, the Boeing side, because where American have taken 85 737 MAX 10s, they have also taken 85 of the A321neo. That's what I mean by it being quite diplomatic. I guess the winner here is is Embraer with that older E175, where they've secured, you know, 90 orders out of nowhere for an aircraft that, as you mentioned, is not in the latest aircraft portfolio that is typically offered to airline customers around the world in these times.
Yeah, it's a super interesting development. And I think another development American announced is they're also refitting older A319s and A320s with more premium seats, which, although American has sort of been going the opposite direction of Delta and United in that aspect, it's interesting to see, okay, they realize that's the best way to follow, because airlines, you know, United, for example, in 2023, more than half of their revenue came from premium cabins. So you can imagine premium cabins represent a much smaller percentage of the overall passenger numbers, but half the revenue, or more than half, comes from premium cabins. So airlines really want to introduce for more first class seats, as many as they can possibly sell. And US airlines have become way better at pricing it reasonably. And, you know, the US is really good and efficient in many ways. This is one of them. If you're checking flights, most of the time, at least based on my calculations, it makes sense for me to just pay for first class, because if I think about what's included, if I think about how much extra am I willing to pay for hour, it's priced just in that sweet spot that even on a 5-hour flight, let's say New York to Denver, first class might be $250 or $300 more than economy.
Yeah.
But if that was in Asia or in the Middle East, where, you know, we always talk about U.S. airlines suck, their first class is not good. And you go to Asia and it's like, yeah, on a 1 hour flight, you can get a Singapore Airlines A350 with lie flat seats. And it's absolutely incredible. But you'll be paying like $2,000 for that 1 hour flight. Yeah. So the pricing is just absolutely ridiculous. While in the U.S., they've found, you know, the best, most reasonable level of pricing to actually fill the cabins with paying customers and maximize revenue.
You're right. You know, it's funny. You just reminded me of something. I think the last time I flew Virgin Atlantic was in 2018 or 2019, coming back from Newark.
No, I remember this. No.
Yes.
I remember you posting about it. We even spoke about that.
Yeah. And at the check-in, they were offering upgrades from economy to premium economy. And of course, the Virgin Atlantic has a really solid premium economy. I mean, it's great. It's on the higher end of the premium economy spectrum. They were offering upgrades, I think, for $250. And I can remember that the passenger checking in next to me needed to purchase two bags. And I remember the exchange where the agent said, if you purchase two bags, it's going to be $220, or I can upgrade you to premium economy for $250. And for example, whatever was happening that day, they'll be included. And she was like, no, just the bags. What? You know,
that's airplane brain. Like,
yeah, like, you know,
it's like when
she basically paid the same. Yeah.
It's like when I told you Oscar's friends wouldn't spend $15 for extra legroom on a 5 hour flight, but they're happy to spend $25 on a beer. It's like once you're in that more comfortable seat, you will never regret it. So it's just like something about the way people are wired when it comes to aviation specifically, where they're like, I don't want to spend $1 more.
Psychologically, to understand that, I think it's because people just perceive it to be far too temporary, right? So, but it's over after a few hours, so what's the point? But, you know, so is your drink, right?
Yeah, over much faster.
Yeah, so there we go.
One last piece of news, speaking of Embraer and, you know, what's going on there, I don't feel like we talk about them too often, but it's quite interesting because Scoot, the low-cost arm of Singapore Airlines, which we spoke about a few episodes ago, are taking delivery of the Embraer 190E2 in... Huh. I don't know if they've just done it or it's very soon. They've scheduled flights from May. And first of all, this aircraft, to me, feels extremely not Asia, because there you have huge aircraft operating on really short routes. You know, Scoot operates A321neos to all types of places, so... For them to get an aircraft this small is a really interesting shift. They've announced that it will operate flights up to twice daily from Singapore to Koh Samui, which is amazing news. First of all, catering to that White Lotus audience that's about to come after season 3 comes out from Koh Samui. But also, Koh Samui is really, really expensive to fly to because Bangkok Airways, the Thai boutique airline that basically owns that airport, has almost a monopoly, and their prices are so high compared to any other domestic route in Thailand, compared to most international routes to Thailand. So the fact that Scoot is able to come in here, I think will really drive down prices, at least internationally, to get there, which is great news. And this aircraft is incredibly efficient. I'm reading here that Embraer claims this is about the Embraer 195, not the 190, which is what Scoot is getting. But they claim that the Embraer 195 has trip costs that are 22% lower than an Airbus A320neo. So that's a drastic difference in cost. Of course, they're saying trip costs. So the question is how we interpret that in terms of maybe that's a marketing phrase, because they're not saying per seat or something.
No. It's an interesting claim. They're able to make these claims based on a whole, you know, kind of different variety of parameters that maybe don't match up to the real world scenarios, don't match up to real world events, external, you know, everything aviation remains exposed to. So we always have to be careful with these claims. But, I mean, it's come from somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. what about we answer some claims and hop over to Q&A?
Let's do it.
So we have a question here. I can't see who it's from, unfortunately, but listening to the podcast in the Al Safwa jacuzzi.
Oh, I got that as well.
Yes. I love that. So he's asking for our expertise on South African aviation, in particular South African Airways. Where do we see them in the future? Now, of course, South African Airways has been struggling for a long time, and
as long as we can remember.
Yeah, exactly. And they really took the pandemic to just go, all right, let's restart from scratch, scrapped all their long haul routes, and they are slowly building that back. But what do we think about their odds of success?
I think their odds of success, well, it depends how you define success. I mean,
being happy. That's how Swedish people define success.
Yeah. Well, how successful are they finding success then?
No, but I mean, internationally, South Africa is a really tough market because, yes, there is quite a bit of premium demand, but there are so many international airlines competing for traffic to South Africa. And basically what ends up happening is people coming from Europe are loyal to European airlines, so they will fly with them. People coming from Asia will fly with Singapore Airlines or Cathay Pacific. People coming from the US can now fly United or Delta. So really, South African is trying to, you know, capture the South African market, which will not be as high yield as, you know, Brits visiting South Africa, for example. So they're in a tough situation.
They are. They are trying to remedy this, though, now. I mean, they are trying to remedy this. So before South African Airways went into this current rescue, because it's just been in and out of rescue for well over a decade, the business had about 5,000 employees, right? That's now down to 1,000. And that's not something that they want to show as something that they're proud of necessarily, because there is an awful unemployment scene across South Africa. But the reality is that this airline is in major need of a tidy up, and that's what they're trying to do now. And I think it's always funny that I receive developments and headlines and pings of information about South African Airways all the time, and it's like always one extreme to the other. So one ping will say about how the government's getting involved and that they are slamming the way in which still their financials are, you know, this is unaccounted for and this is this. And then the next ping will be about how the airline is aiming to triple their fleet and will be expanding to Perth, Johannesburg. And I was like, this is the same carrier. You know, it's incredibly troubled. But it's important to remember that this was once a giant of African aviation, but there are still doubts about the financial viability of the future of this carrier. And, you know, yes, they disappeared completely in 2020 because of COVID, as you said. I mean, the airline is back. It is under audit. They are trying to, you know, be a little more credible in terms of their financials, because I think it's something like from 2018, they lost well over £1 billion. I mean, it was something crazy. But, they have a goal to be a major player again. And I hope that they're able to realize this vision. But it's, I mean, that's messy. Has a whole lot of bureaucracy that needs clearing. I think from now, the most significant developments of them kind of climbing out of this hole and, you know, is the fact that they have reopened their routes to Sao Paulo from South Africa, and that they're also, as I mentioned, selling their tickets to Perth. But they're still on shaky ground. They're not out of the woods yet, would be my answer to that. But we're going to be keeping an eye on it, of course. But Maximilian, I trust that you are also going to be keeping an eye with us on those developments. But of course, you'll be keeping an eye from exactly where you sent this question from, which is the jacuzzi of Al Safwa. You sent a nice picture of your luggage in the distance and of the jacuzzi filling up fast. And I replied to you referring to you as... as a legend, because we love it when we are hearing that people are listening to the podcast in weird and wonderful places, the Al-Safwa Jacuzzi being more on the wonderful side.
It sounds a bit sketch when you say someone sent a photo from a jacuzzi, so I'm glad it was only of the luggage. Just one more comment about South African aviation. It's funny how everything is so intertwined, because there was an airline or a company called Calm Air there that was actually a British Airways franchisee. So
yeah,
that's what we tie in with British Airways. They ceased operations in 2022, which didn't have a major impact besides the fact that they had a subsidiary called Kalula, which was a low-cost airline operating primarily between cities like Johannesburg and Durban and Cape Town.
With the funky green livery.
Super cool livery with like these fun, basically like arrows explaining what different things are, which was really fun as Nav Geek. But the fact that they're out of the market, the fact that South African has decreased in size so much, is a huge problem for pricing. And prices have skyrocketed on domestic routes in South Africa. So I feel really, really bad for everyone who's impacted by that. And I guess it shows that maybe prices were unsustainably low, but it's still a shame when something like that has to happen. And there's no real sign that prices are going to go down anytime soon.
I have a message here from James. He says, really enjoyed this week's podcast. Just wanted to say that I've loved it since day one. Dan's talk of Gothenburg is funny, as I probably think about it more than he does, as I am the poor guy that has to manage revenue and prices for Gothenburg for British Airways.
Yes. I know him. I've DM'd with him too.
Of course you have. He's probably your cousin.
I'm like, please lower the prices, darling.
Unbelievable. He just wanted to let us know that he's the only other person in the world who also knows about that little place in Sweden that you go on about a lot.
All right. Well, Tobias asks, what do we think about Turkish Airlines' new Crystal Business Class, which is going to be presented at Aircraft Interiors Expo in Hamburg in May?
This is going to be interesting. I was reading a briefing note about this last night, literally just last night. So that's cool. The way in which airlines are reinvesting in their cabins is just, I just don't remember a time like this. I mean, it's everyone, which is, you know, airlines. Some of these airlines had these plans prior to the pandemic. Then the pandemic, everything was on the shelf. Then now they're back. Then now they're making money. Travel demand is absolutely immense. Pent-up demand, new demand, fresh demand, summer demand everywhere. And so with that, airlines are making a lot of money, which we've spoken about extensively before on the podcast. And they're splashing the cash in this race to the premium passengers' pocket. And I have high expectations for this new cabin. I don't know if I like the name. It's a bit like Crystal.
Yeah, it's a bit like discount, like dollar store luxury.
Yeah, brand. It's like they wanted to call it like Diamond and then they decided, you know, no, we can't. So we'll just call it Crystal or something. Yeah. I just feel like they could have been a bit more imaginative. I like it when the name of a product is somehow linked maybe to the culture or to the, you know, just something that's a bit more embedded to the roots of the, I mean, how straightforward. And we know that it has set the benchmark for the entire industry because of how early it debuted. How straightforward is Q Suite?
You know, yeah,
the
great
fact that it's just Q and it's a suite. So, and most things in Qatar, they put a Q in front of it anyway. So it's
what if Turkish had named it Turkish Delight?
Turkish Delight. Okay. Thank you, thank you for listening to today's episode of On Air. I'm Alex. That's apparently Dan.
No, but it's interesting just because they're designing this seat themselves, which is not all that common.
No.
The thing that makes it kind of weird is that just a few months ago, or maybe, I don't know, more than a few months, but last year, the CEO of Turkish Airlines said that they're working on a custom seat that maintains their 232 layout on their 777, which made everyone confused because they said that it's going to have the same density. And as far as anyone knows, there is no seat in the world with direct aisle access, which he was promising, that has that level of density in a 232 configuration, because the only real seat that has direct aisle access in that configuration is the Apex suite, but yeah, it takes up much more space. So That left everyone curious. And now it's kind of weird to just a few months later be saying, actually, it's going to be in a 1-to-1 configuration. It's debuting quite soon and we're making it. It makes everyone wonder, like, what is going on? Because it takes years and years to develop a seat. So for the CEO to change his mind on the configuration so fast and quite soon before the launch is quite unusual.
Have you been to the Aircraft and Tourist Expo in Hamburg?
Yeah, we went there together in 2016 or something.
Goodness, did we?
Yeah, thanks for remembering.
What? No, I don't remember that at all. No, you're getting confused. Time. That was Berlin. That was ITV Berlin. We didn't...
No, we met in Hamburg also.
Did we?
Yeah, that was the year when I was like going to everything.
Why don't I remember this? I'm usually good at remembering things. Why don't I remember that at all?
Okay, well, I'll find a photo and send it. Anyway.
Well, what's funny is that Turkish Airlines have always got a pretty strong presence there, funnily enough, always. And they have a bit of a link, don't they, with Istanbul with Hamburg in terms of population and the number of Turkish citizens or those of Turkish heritage that are in Hamburg. So I think it's quite understandable that it's Hamburg where they're going to want to debut this. I think if I was announcing a revolutionary new product, I wouldn't choose an Aircraft Interiors Expo, just because for those that haven't been to Aircraft Interiors Expo, it's basically a huge, huge conference hall where airlines can quite literally go shopping for cabins, right? And the most incredible different aircraft design concepts are there. You know, economy class seats that you could only ever dream up, okay? Kitchen designs for the galley where you have like crew that are able to do a whole, you know, for example, a fry up in a pan and a saucepan and it will show an innovative dishwasher. And, you know, there's just the best of everything that's on offer. You walk around it and you think, why has nobody taken any of this? Like, why is this not our reality of commercial air travel? Because if commercial air travel had everything in that hall, I mean, our podcast would only be able to talk every week about how amazing everything is. You know, everything's amazing from Ryanair to Emirates and so on and so on. So it's because of the amount of great things that are on offer, I think I wouldn't unveil a product because it would, you know, the spotlight wouldn't be there. I always think a new product should be unveiled at the home of the airline to have emphasis on, you know, to hub everything, to keep it together. If I'm the CEO of Turkish Airlines and IST is my hub, then I'm going to, I think I'm going to make that announcement from Istanbul. But hey, I'm not the CEO of Turkish Airlines and instead I'm on the podcast and that's why they're announcing it in Hamburg.
Yeah, IST is your hub. I love that. So last question from Alistair. He says, hi, Dan and Alex, huge fan of the podcast and I've been a fan of both of you for a long time. Thank you. My question is more centered around your predictions outlooks on UK airlines. What do you see being future strategic moves for UK based airlines? Jet2 has a big order for Airbus narrow bodies. Do you see some of these being for A321LRs or XLRs for possible long haul expansion? What about other future aircraft routes and products from TUI, Virgin, and BA? Thank you. Keep up the brilliant work.
I would say on the outlook of UK aviation, I think, and I'll put it here on the record now on the podcast, I think that at some point over the next 24 months, EasyJet may be purchased.
Huh? By who?
I think there are a variety of different candidates that could purchase EasyJet, but it wouldn't shock me if IAG made a move.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I think that consolidation is ahead for the UK aviation market. Not that it really needs it, because there's not, you know, too much capacity since the pandemic, but I do think that the way in which EasyJet is performing, the airline is not vulnerable because they're doing very well, but it makes them quite attractive to be snapped up. And I just think that I'm not sure they're going to be the standalone player that they are today, let's say at some point over the next 24 months. I would also keep my eye on Wizz. Again, is an airline that has ambition, and I don't think they're simply comfortable with just being, just having being the place Wizz. That they have, just being Wizz. I mean, if I was Wizz, I wouldn't be comfortable being Wizz either. But I think, speaking probably about it, I think that Wizz is an airline to keep an eye on. And Jet2 also, you know, good reputation, definitely have infiltrated the market of having passengers. Everyone just speaks so positively about them. I mean, it really is such a, there's anybody I ask that, and Jet2 doesn't, you know, barely comes up in conversation, doesn't it? I mean, we don't even mention it as an airline, no. Right? And yet, if you do find someone that has flown with them, 9 times out of 10, which is a pretty high statistic, they just beaming with, oh, and they were so friendly and they were so nice. And so, you know, hats off to them for being able to achieve that. I think that their future is bright also. And as Alistair mentioned, they've got an outstanding aircraft order, which should strengthen their position if they were going to utilize it properly. But if I had to, you know, crystal ball time, I think keep your eye on EasyJet. And you heard it here first, ladies and gents, episode 25, Bon Air with Dan and Alex.
All right. That is a great suspenseful note to end on. We will leave it there. And thank you so much for joining us this week, guys. We can't wait to see you next Wednesday, as always, on air.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.